For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere, this is Believe.
This episode of the Gegenpressing Podcast is brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline is your number one source for all your summer sports this season, from MLB, golf, NBA, and NHL playoff stats. All the latest stats, news, and scores available to follow your favorite teams. Get the latest odds and lines, including the latest team matchups, player props, and odds on just about every sport out there. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to get in on the action. BetOnline, where the game starts. Hello and welcome to Gegenpressing, the Bundesliga podcast. I'm Manu Feeth. I'm not joined by Matt Ford or Stefan Bienkowski. They are both on assignment, which is just a fancy journalism word for saying they are on holiday. Anyhow, because of that, I had to recruit an old friend, Dan Wyden from AFP. Dan, I am so pleased you're on the show. You and I have been on many DFL Bundesliga media trips together, but we've never actually managed to get you on the podcast, which I think is overdue. So before we start, what brought you to the Bundesliga? It's great to have you on the show finally.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Manu. It's we've had many long and winding conversations about the Bundesliga before, but I don't think they've ever been recorded. So this is nice. I'm originally from Australia, but I've been in Berlin for about 12 years, freelancing in football for a while, football journalism and standard news journalism, and then I started a few years ago full time with Agence France-Presse in Berlin. So I'm based in Berlin and cover officially German sport, but for the international market. Football is the biggest game in town, so mostly covering German football, both the Bundesliga and then German teams in Europe as well.
You must be so busy right now with everything that's going on.
Yeah, there's definitely. I mean, it was funny to be. I was in the press box at Dortmund when they beat Atletico, when the full-time siren sounded and it was clear that Dortmund's going to the semifinals, there was a couple of journos around me who were like, oh, come on, you know, like more work, you know, because not from AFP, just to be clear, but it's one of those things of like it's exciting to see German teams go through, but then there's a lot more to do. There's at the moment, it's really busy. I mean, obviously the Euros are a big thing coming up as well. So kind of planning for that. To be a part of this season has been pretty incredible, considering both Leverkusen, what they're doing, and then having three German teams in the semis of the Champions League and EuroLeague is a lot's happening.
Yeah, it feels like a very special moment in German football with everything that's been happening. A new champion, and of course you mentioned the teams going deep in Europe, which isn't given. We've not seen something like this in quite a long time. Then, of course, also the Euros are just around the corner and Germany looking much improved under Julian Nagelsmann. It just seems to be happening all at the same time. And let's start with Julian Nagelsmann, actually, Dan, because that is a really good transition to the Bayern game, 5-1 against Union Berlin, on the backs of Julian Nagelsmann saying nein to joining Bayern Munich and then extending his contract with the German national team. People that listen to this podcast know that that's what I have, you know, always predicted would happen and thought was the most likeliest outcome, because A, Bayern Munich are in a difficult situation and a huge turnover expected, but also I think Nagelsmann just feeling really comfortable with the DFB at the moment. And internally at Bayern Munich, there's a lot of different voices wanting different things. It's not the easiest place to step into. Yet, you know, Dan, you saw them smash Union. And it's such a weird club at the moment, because they have these great moments under Tuchel, but they also have these moments of madness. And How did you see them this weekend? And how do you see their situation in general right now?
Yeah, it's a really weird time to be a Bayern Munich fan. I'm not one, but to observe Bayern Munich, because the way it's been for a decade, at least in my case of being in Germany, and of course for much longer than that, but they always get their man. That's the Bayern Munich thing. I know before Harry Kane came, I'd said he was going to come, and others said that he wouldn't leave the Premier League. But it's just because Bayern always get their man. And so when their focus turned to Alonso, I thought they'd get him, and that didn't happen. And then when they decided to try and patch things up with Nagelsmann, I thought that would, like many people at Bayern, I suppose, I thought that would happen. I definitely could see why they would want him back, just being the most attractive candidate out there that also sticks to their criteria, you know, speaking German and understanding the club, that kind of thing. But I thought maybe from his point of view, I mean, the way that he was asked to leave, I can imagine it'd have a bad taste in the mouth for him. So in that sense that he decided to extend with Germany, I guess he just decided he didn't want to go back. It wasn't the time for him to go back. But it's also just a really strange time now with, you know, Bayern through to the semifinals, performed well against Arsenal, one of the most informed teams this season. And then, you know, they have these moments where they do really, really well in the Bundesliga, but they've also agreed to ship Tuchel out. So now they're going through, I heard that Lucien Favre was a possibility today, or they're going through these kind of, the casting couch of coaches, but it seems that they've, the two most appropriate names, Nagelsmann and Tuchel, they've both decided to get rid of at various times. So it seems a lot of it's self-inflicted, really.
Yeah, it does seem self-inflicted. I mean, Eber said the Stachel is its teeth, right? There's still the wound is still festering. I guess it's the best translation from German to English. And with Nagelsmann making that decision. But my understanding was too that Nagelsmann understands that the big clubs are still going to be out there for him, even if he stays with Germany till 2026 after the World Cup, right? He's going to be 40 then. I think we forget how young he is and how much time he has, right, to sort of develop his personality still. And, you know, working with Rudi Völler apparently has been something that he's been really enjoying. And then, of course, I think there's also that allure in Germany to coach the national team that you don't necessarily have in other countries. And then on top of all of that, his ego was hurt when Bayern fired him and brought in Tuchel and things got worse. And then I think it's so odd that Bayern then did the same thing with Tuchel, who I actually think Bayern have to go through a little bit of a rebuild now. And that's exactly what Tuchel has been telling the bosses. So Dan, I actually feel the coach they have right now might be the best coach going forward.
This people forget that. I mean, it's unbelievable what Leverkusen are doing. It's incredible. And so there was a time, I think, before the game in Leverkusen Bayern in February, where the points totals of both teams are in the top five all time Bundesliga. So clearly Tuchel was doing a pretty good job. And then once you fall 5-8 points behind, you know, as we've seen with Dortmund in the last few years, it's really hard to keep up that momentum, especially when you're trying to do something in Europe as well. So I think that, the Bayern, they again pulled the trigger because they weren't on top. And it just seems to be a really knee-jerk reaction when, if they had have been, you know, the Bayern we know is kind of the careful, thoughtful, making the right decisions, having the long term in focus. But they seem to have pulled the trigger again when they could have thought, okay, well, yep, we're going to eat it this year. We're going to lose. But we have one of the best coaches still in Europe, and we'll build for the revenge next season. So it just seems odd. And now, I mean, when you think about it, what situation would you prefer to be in? Would you prefer to have Julian Nagelsmann or Thomas Tuchel, okay, maybe not winning the league title for the first time in 11 years? Or do you want to be out there looking for coaches like Lucien Favre, who hasn't been in work for several years, or calling back Hansi Flick, which seems to be the other possibility. Then you hear about Unai Emery and stuff like this, but it's a very uncertain situation to be in, and it's all a product of their own making.
Yeah, I also think that they kind of created an environment that coaches don't necessarily want to go to.
Right,
yeah. Because they fired Nagelsmann without any need. The situation with Tuchel, they escalated themselves. And while I think that bringing Christoph Freund and Max Eberl as the double sporting director team, right, director of sport and sporting director, we have podcasts on this explaining what the difference is between a director of sport and a sporting director, two of the same terms that can be very different meaning when you flip them around, Dan. But, you know, I think that the team behind the coach, I think they made some really smart decisions there. And yet it feels like Max Eberl and Christoph Freund are sort of trying to just play cleanup and getting one no after another from all these different head coaches. And that is a really weird situation to be in for Bayern Munich, because I don't, as you said, you allude to it. I didn't think they would get Alonso, but again, you know, it was an educated guess. But, you know, in 2 or 3 years ago, they went and to Leipzig and basically muscled their way in to sign Nagelsmann, right? And now they find themselves in a situation where they don't get their man. And I think that is something that they're just not used to.
Yeah. That's exactly it. When they got rid of Tuchel, they just assumed that whoever they'd get would be an able replacement. And it doesn't seem like that's going to happen. I mean, Max Eberl seems to be the right person. He did incredible work with Gladbach for so long. When you think about, where they are financially and all those kind of things. And so I think his impact will take a while to tell. It does seem like they're doing cleanup. And when if you're Max Eberl and you're starting that job and you think about who are the two candidates who, at least up until last Friday, will be free and out of contract in the summer that fit all our criteria, well, that's Julian Nagelsmann and Thomas Tuchel. And these are both two people who we've made it complicated for ourselves. I was at the game on Saturday, and from Bayern's point of view, Union were strong early for the first 30 minutes, but they just don't have a goal scorer. They couldn't get across the line. And then, you know, Bayern started to, they got one goal and two goals, and then it snowballed from there. But to see Tuchel in the mix zone afterwards, he didn't do the press conference. They had to rush off. This phrase, you'd know it, Manu, immer die extra Wurst, this German phrase, which means always something a little bit more for you. Like Bayern, there's always got to be something special with Bayern. They can't just do the press conference. They've got to go to the airport. So they have to do it in the mix zone. There's always something, some special treatment for them. But it was funny to see Thomas Tuchel. He's got this swagger about him now that he knows that no matter what he does, he can make decisions without consequence. I mean, he's out of the job anyway. He's through to the semifinals against Real Madrid. And, he seems to be kind of laughing and joking and not the guy he was a month ago when the stress seemed to be getting to him. Now he knows he's going to be heading somewhere else in summer. So he just seems to be – it was kind of a nice chat afterwards with him, because he was in a pretty chirpy mood.
Yeah, Manchester United is being whispered for Thomas Tuchel. You know, it is funny that he could win the Champions League with them. And then what?
Yeah, which is a really realistic possibility. I mean, I think, you know, the hardest challenge is going to be getting past Real, but then the other side of the draw is not as strong. And, you know, if they take on Paris or they take on Dortmund, they'd be favoured. So, it's really, really possible. And then, that there's kind of more egg on the face of Bayern again, that they've let this guy go who took them to, you know, a previous Champions League winner who's played in two Champions League finals as a coach. And if he takes them even to the final, I mean, it's, just makes the decision seem even more mystifying, really.
Yeah, it is truly fascinating. I think the issue with Berlin was the airport. Remember, they got stuck there when they played the FIFA Club World Cup and they had to sleep in the plane. I think that was probably what they wanted to avoid.
Wanted to avoid that.
Yeah. And extra wurst means the extra sausage. Just for
those who play at home.
which translates really poorly when you think about it.
Yeah, but it's obviously a topic for another podcast, but the amount of raisins that use sausage, Wurst in German, it's reflects the country's deep love of the sausage.
It's true. With Thomas Tuchel, I guess it always had to come to an end. Or if you'd use the German phrase, alles hat ein Ende, nur die Wurst hat zwei. Everything has an end, except for the sausage has two.
Maybe if he stays another season, then there'll be two ends to Tuchel. But I can't imagine that happening. I can't imagine him saying he would want to stay on. He really seemed to be... he looks like the guy in the office who's given his notice and he's whistling to the photocopier. There's squad planning happening. There's all these discussions over who are we going to get as coach and what's going on. And he's just, he can mark himself vacant for those meetings because it's not part, he doesn't have to worry about it, you know. And he seems to, it was a close run thing against Arsenal, but maybe that has also freed him up a bit to just coach how he wants to. Obviously the selections in the aftermath of that decision, Joshua Kimmich has been at right back since that decision was made, no longer in the midfield. He's decided to play what he thinks is the best team. Eric Dier has been in every game pretty much, which is a bit of a surprise probably to plenty of people. When you've got Kim or Upamecano or De Ligt there, you know, he has this kind of free swagger now, and it's interesting to see how far they'll take it.
Yeah, I think it's really fascinating. This Bayern situation, of course, we have a bonus show planned later this week with Matt Ford, where we're going to look at the whole Julian Nagelsmann situation in particular. Before we move on to the second game that you went to, I want to really briefly touch on Union Berlin. We have quite a lot of Union Berlin fans that listen to this podcast. 2 points from the relegation zone now, Dan. How worried do we have to be about Union?
I really feel like the game, it was such a funny switch in feeling from before and after. You know, before the game, there's these banners saying, you know, we've got to stay up, but it's just this event that Bayern Munich is coming to the Alte Försterei. Like, what an incredible thing to happen, and you couldn't have imagined it even a few years ago. You know, it's such a still such an event, even though they've been in the top league for a few years now. And so there was a real, it felt a bit like a celebration beforehand, and I think since Nina Bilic has taken over, there's this kind of feeling of, okay, maybe we're not going to hit the heights of what we did before, but we'll at least stay up, we'll at least, you know, build. But then after the game was over and the way that Union were beaten, I really felt like there's, now it's become clear that this isn't, this is serious. We're only, with Mainz doing incredibly well, I really thought that the bottom three were just going to stay there because they've all been so terrible this year. But Henriksen's done some incredible stuff at Mainz, and now they're out of the drop for the first time since August. So it's really, you know, Union have to be really worried. And they haven't taken many points from their last few games. And it really felt, at least in the crowd, of like, okay, the celebration feeling of taking on the biggest club in Germany is over. Now we realize that we're pretty close to the edge.
Yeah, it's four games. And I mean, Mainz has, I spoke to Bo Henriks a couple of weeks ago for Gegenpressing. And I get the sense that there's really a coach there that has spurned him on to something new. And that's kind of reshuffled the entire relegation zone, hasn't it? Because Bochum, I think, made a mistake firing Letch, and it shows. All of a sudden, Union are back in that drop zone, and so are Wolfsburg. So it's kind of a very different, we got into a scenario now where I think Köln are done, basically. I think Darmstadt, obviously, they're done too. But that playoff spot, there is Bochum, Mainz, Union, and Wolfsburg, and even Gladbach maybe too, that could all still end up on that spot. And you have one team in Mainz on the ascendancy, and then you have a couple like Bochum and Union and Wolfsburg that kind of seem to be in this really kind of really bad place right now, where they don't seem to have the identity or the even the enthusiasm to maybe pull themselves out of. Is that a fair description of what's happening?
Yeah, for sure. Right now? I think that probably Union fans also thought that because the bottom three are so bad, they'll at least be okay. I mean, after Berisha took over, there was this run of good results, at least at home. They were getting wins at home and getting wins over teams they had to beat, you know, the likes of Wolfsburg and this kind of thing. These are the teams they need to be beating at home. But, you know, Wolfsburg themselves, I mean, they've had Hasenhüttl come in and I think they've had 1, 2, and 4 mm-hmm. since he's there. I have to check that. But around, they've had at least two crucial wins. Mainz are doing well. Yeah, Thomas Lecce, I mean, this guy, I think when you think about what he's done with Bochum to keep them there and to, they've had some, you know, really memorable matches since he's taken over. And then since they've let him go, it's not been good at all. Even letting go of Baumgart for Cologne seems to have not been the right decision. They've struggled since he's left. So, yeah, there's a weird funk at the bottom. Maybe there doesn't seem to be that urgency. Perhaps now with 4 days to go, it'll set in. The game between Union and Bochum in 2 weeks in Berlin will be crucial. It's going to be, you know, if Union don't win that, especially if they lose that, they'll be behind Bochum and they could be in the relegation zone as it is. I mean, at least the playoff, as you said. So that's going to be a crucial one. Yeah. Union this season haven't, you know, the last few years under Fischer, they've managed some pretty incredible results against big teams. Whereas this year, they seem to have, when they meet some of the top four, top five teams, they seem to be clearly outclassed, but they've managed to get they've got some wins over teams that they really should, like, you know, mid-table or lower table teams. That seems to be what they've done. And so when they're not playing anyone in the top six in their final four games, so they're gonna have to try and get something at Gladbach. They're gonna need to beat Bochum at home, definitely, and then there's that game against Cologne in Cologne. Things could be over for Cologne by then, who knows. And so that'll be crucial as well. So, I think it's a nervy time to be an Union fan, and what a season to be, you know, to start off playing against Real Madrid in the Champions League, and then to finish it by battling a potential relegation.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Yeah, we had one, you know, the book, Scheiße, we're going up. someone said in the chat, Scheiße, we're going down. No, a Substack chat. So I guess that's the flip side of Union Berlin. I personally think they're going to be ultimately fine, but it's a really interesting position that they're in, and the relegation battle is one to follow, especially because the Bundesliga title is done and dusted. And I know you went to Dortmund against Leverkusen in anticipation of them maybe winning the title there. Leverkusen, of course, have done it already last week. But then I think this game against Dortmund highlighted why Leverkusen did win the title, because you just can't beat them.
Yeah.
It's impossible.
Yeah, that was, you know, a few weeks ago, that was kind of our editorial idea, was that perhaps it seemed to be, and it would have been such a story in itself, that Leverkusen were on track. If Bayern kept winning, Leverkusen kept winning, Leverkusen were on track to win the title at Dortmund, which, having been there on the final match day last year when it all went belly up against Mainz, it would have just, you know, been particularly tough for Dortmund fans to take. Thankfully for them, they got it. Thankfully for Dortmund, that's to say, Leverkusen got the job done the week before at home to Bremen. But yeah, on Sunday it was. I think because of what's happened in Europe, because Dortmund are through to the semi-finals, and because of German teams' performance in Europe, it looks like fifth place will be enough for the Champions League. So I think there wasn't that kind of existential dread at Dortmund that, you know, we always hear from the club hierarchy about how important the Champions League is for them and with their finance structure. So this top four fight is so crucial. But now that it looks like fifth place will be enough, it seems that there wasn't that desperation among the fans or among people I spoke to. But then when it's this year, it's so difficult to predict what Dortmund's going to do. You know, they can often show all their faces in one game. I was at the Atletico Madrid game in Dortmund, and you know, I'll die 5 years earlier than I was going to otherwise because of the stress of reporting on that game of like Dortmund were up ahead and then two quick goals from poor defense and then to come back with a, you know, incredible performance from Sabitzer in the second half there. And you just, yeah, it's everything in one, you know. And so when Füllkrug scored that goal with under 10 minutes to go to put them ahead, it really seemed like, okay, wow, this is we're going to do what no one else has been able to do this year and beat Leverkusen. But then, of course, I think we looked at it. It's 14 goals after the 90th minute mark this season, which is really something else that they've managed to do. And then they did it again to level the scores there. So, but I think, yeah, I mean, which was pretty spectacular, and it was great to see Xabi Alonso running down the sideline and jumping in with his players when he's quite a reserved guy on the touchline. But I don't think the disappointment was as big for Dortmund just because they realize, you know, that they're not in such a bad position considering the Champions League and then considering as well this fifth place element.
Well, if Dortmund finish fifth and win the Champions League, sixth will also go in the Champions League, would be absolutely madness.
A sentence that you wouldn't imagine saying even a month ago, but here we are.
I mean, it's really a couple of things come to mind when you were speaking about Dortmund. The aging part. So essentially, watching Dortmund these days is like smoking a pack of cigarettes, but also. I mean, it's true. I mean, this Dortmund team, you don't know what to get with them, and expect the unpredictable is what it is. There's a reason why when they went to Munich, I tipped them to win the Klassiker, because that would be the most Dortmund thing to do. Winning the Champions League this year would be the most Dortmund thing to do.
Yeah, I think probably the most Dortmund thing to do would be, yeah, making the final and losing to Bayern in Wembley. but as well, I mean, this is the thing. It's so hard to get a read on. I think from everyone, from the Dortmund fans to the Dortmund hierarchy, it's hard to get a read on, okay, is Edin Terzic not even the right man, but is he a good coach? You know, do we know, you know? And
yeah.
And is, you know, are the players, you know, like there's just so many players in there that reflect Dortmund's situation. Like, is Nico Schlotterbeck an incredible creative centre-back, or is he like a mistake-prone wannabe striker that someone's playing in defence? You know, like he has these moments in games, like the game in Madrid, it just was just these errors. And you thought, you know, people who don't watch much Bundesliga were texting me and saying, you know, how bad can the Bundesliga be if Dortmund are one of the better teams, because they're just inviting goals for Atletico, who didn't have to play particularly well. But then they come back and win 4-2. I don't know. It's one of those things where the more I see it, the less I understand. I try to think of clever, you know, insightful things to say about Dortmund, but they continue to to surprise me. And when I'm doing my planning for the remainder of the season, to think, okay, will I need to be in Dortmund for the semifinals? Will I need to be in London for the final? It gets harder and harder because you just don't know. Like you said, you have to expect the unexpected and bank on them being inconsistent.
One of my crazy predictions for this year is that Bayern and Dortmund are going to make the Champions League final, and the Harry Kane curse is going to strike again, and Dortmund are going to somehow win it with Kane missing a late penalty.
I mean, that's
that's very scripted.
Then you realize that in a month's time, that people are going to say, "All right, it's all rigged because Manu knew about it." The end is already written. Yeah, I mean, that would be, and that's also a great thing for German football, considering all of this. I mean, I'm not sure if people listening are aware of the Mats Hummels Farmers League thing that went really viral this week and has been, politicians have talked about it and other people have spoken about it, and it's become a big, Hummels tweeted, "Great harvesting this week to my fellow farmers," after no English teams made it into the semis and two German teams did. And, it particularly blew up with plenty of Schadenfreude against the English teams, and then plenty of people saying, "Oh, you got lucky," and this kind of thing. But I think it is really good for for German football, and also with Leverkusen there, And I think maybe you said it on Twitter, I'm not sure, but that Germany has two teams in the Champions League last four, and they're not even the two best teams in Germany. So that's a... Yeah,
that was me,
it's when you look at the way Stuttgart and Leverkusen have played this year, when you look at that DFB Pokal quarterfinal between the two of them, that was just an incredible game. Lots of drama, but also really top quality play. Like, it's really, really, like, you looked at that and you thought, okay, these teams, they know what they're doing. They're really well coached and well prepared for the game. And so that in itself is really good. I think that, I saw a story last week that, so Jamie Lebelling from Union is on loan at Stuttgart, and he's got a buyout clause or whatever at the end of the loan of 5 million. And the story was that Stuttgart can't afford that. You think, wow, this is, you've got a team that's running level with Bayern and really pushed Leverkusen when they've played each other, and they can't afford to spend 5 million on a winger. And so you realize, like, how great of a job it is that they're doing, and that Sebastian Hoeneß is doing it. Stuttgart.
Yeah, no, Stuttgart. There's a book to be written about them, and I'm really looking forward to go back there in a couple of weeks' time to cover them in person. I've been in contact with them too, so there was going to be lots of Stuttgart content coming. I think the issue with there is that. It's either then if they're signing Dennis Undorf, there's probably not going to be any money left for anyone else, right? And that is a really tough place to be in. But I guess also a situation that they created for themselves by being really, really, really creative on the transfer market in the first place and playing really great football. And, we had this conversation before the podcast about how Leverkusen have changed the narrative in German football for a lot of these bigger clubs, big historic clubs, I should say. Frankfurt comes to mind, Leipzig comes to mind. Stuttgart, of course, have done the same thing too. And today, of course, we get the news of Borussia Dortmund and they're reshuffling. Lars Ricken is now going to be the new head of sport, or CEO or director of sport, I guess, which is the CEO position, the board position for the person in charge of all sporting matters. He's the equivalent of Max Eberl, essentially. And of course, we don't know what's going to happen with Sebastian Kehl. We know that Oliver Minzlaff is going to join in one form or another. Anyhow, Dortmund with a great restructuring there, and they will be looking at Stuttgart and Leverkusen and probably think to themselves, okay, how can we copy this? And you kind of alluded to this. Is Edin Terzic the right guy to do it?
Yeah, I've really... The one thing that I can, as I said, I would try to think of something insightful and clever, and then I, then all of a sudden they're through to the semis, so it sounds a bit silly. But when you look at that team, I have kind of an unconventional or an unusual opinion in that I don't think that the squad is as bad as everyone says. I think that there is this you know, it's not as strong as some of the ones they've had over the last decade, or at least in terms of the real superstars that they've had. I don't think they really have that clear superstar or handful of superstars that they've had. But this team, this squad isn't bad. They all play at an international level. They're all they've all been good before they came to the club. I think the one thing that makes me unsure about Terzic is that you look at that squad, look at the entire team, and I can't think of one player who's playing better than he ever has before under Terzic. Like, I mean, you could say Gregor Kobel, but I mean, he's a goalkeeper. Yeah,
he's a goalkeeper.
he was good before he moved to Dortmund, and now he's on the biggest stage. Julian Brandt was also his best season of his career at that point was under Marco Rosa, and then last season he was really, really, really good. So I don't know if you could say that. I don't know about, you know, the defensive back line until a few months ago was the Germany defensive, you know, three center backs who were all playing regularly for Germany. You know, younger players, like there's guys like Makoko who aren't really being given a go, even Sancho coming along and then eating up the minutes for Bino Gittens. So I don't know that there's a player there that you can say, okay, the impact of Terzic is that this guy is having his best ever season, or these guys are. And if you look at Sebastian Hoeneß, if you look at Xabi Alonso, I mean, that's what a top coach does. And that's what, you know, the comment about Jurgen Klopp, that he was, when you look at the players that he had some superstars. He had Lewandowski and he had these guys, Marco Reus, but there was also guys like Kevin Grosskreutz, who otherwise was a third league player, who Klopp,
Klopp winner, to the international
level. And there's also been the case at Liverpool where players have left and they haven't quite hit the heights that they hit under him. And I think that's what a great coach does. And I just don't, can't think of any examples of Terzic really, you know, clearly having a player who's at their peak form, or at least a fair bit better than what they were before. And even, you know, Bellingham, I mean, he's a bit older now, of course, but the way that he's played in this attacking role for Real Madrid, and you think that in that last few months of the season last year when they were going for the title, if you had have just pushed Bellingham up a little bit more instead of, you know, Emre Can was given an upgrade on his contract and made captain, but I feel like if I played next to Bellingham in defensive midfield, maybe they'd give me a contract. You know, like this is a guy that's pretty incredible, he made Emre Can look like a world beater last year by playing alongside him. So I think that's the thing with Terzic. I don't know that he's a good coach. Maybe he is. Maybe he's doing an incredible job. I mean, on paper, he's got them to the semifinals for the first time in a long time. It would be really interesting to see what this squad could do if they had someone who was one of these top level managers, you know. I'm not sure. And even making the Champions League final, I mean, by making the semis, he's guaranteed himself a job for another season. And by making the Champions League next year, presumably by finishing at least fifth. So we'll see, but it just doesn't seem to be, you know, whatever metric you use, whether it's about bringing in the young guys like Lucien Favre did so well in his time at Dortmund, or getting the most out of, you know, journeyman players, like none of these criteria does he seem to really hit. So I guess you could say I'm not convinced, and I don't know, you know, you wonder how much longer this is going to go at Dortmund. I mean, what happens if they finish fourth next year? But they made the semifinals to the Champions League. You know, this is,
Well, you could also make it worse by winning the Champions League, because then all of a sudden everything is good, right? Because look, job done. And I love that you said, because it's something that I've brought up on a few podcasts in the past. My favorite comparison here is, look at Jonathan Tah, right, at Leverkusen. He will be the starter for Germany at the Euros, and he looks like a really great center back at the moment. Maybe even potential for being a world-class center back. He always had that potential. The problem is he never had the right coach to get it out of him. I actually feel the same about Nico Schlotterbeck. I think Nico Schlotterbeck is a fantastic footballer. He's a terrible defender because no one is teaching him how to defend, but he's a fantastic footballer.
Yeah.
And it's Eden Terzic's job to teach Schlotterbeck the fundamentals of his job, right? Which is defending. Yeah. He has all the skills and all the talent and everything is there. It's like the entire toolbox is available to him to be a world-class defender, but he can't do it. You can say the same about Niklas Süle. And then when you go to other positions, Karim Adeyemi comes to mind, right? You brought up Aino Gittens as well. Mukuku is another one. And that is something that has always kind of struck me. And you look at Hoeneß and Alonso. Hoeneß turned Führich into the next Arjen Robben. Why? Because Führich always had that tool set, but he never had the right coach to teach him how to do it, right? Waldemar Anton, always considered a really talented defender in German football, who never really reached his potential until the right coach showed up. I can go on and on and on and on. And I think that is a really the benchmark for good coaching, isn't it? That they make players better. And we haven't really seen that with Terzic. And then these big games come along and we see the same thing with Bayern Munich a little bit, that in big games, they all show up, right? They all kind of grow to the stature or their, to their talent level, because it's a big challenge. And you see that with the Dortmund team too. So I almost wonder that, oh, they face this enormous challenge, and sometimes they create these challenges for themselves. Look at the Atletico Madrid game, right? And then all of a sudden they rise to the talent level, but it's not because of coaching, it's because of adversity that they face. And in the Bundesliga, they don't always face that adversity, and they don't have the coach to get it out of them.
That's right. I think that they seem to be able to really tough out a result, you know, and I think they really like him. I think that they really do like Kazic, but, you know, like a popular teacher isn't always a good teacher, you know? So I think that...
Yeah, for sure.
I was
just going to say, do they like him because it's easy?
I think that's... Yeah, there's other guys like Adeyemi who came to the club and you thought, wow, okay, they've spent 30 million on him or around about. He was scoring loads of goals. He looked really good and he's just never seemed to really get back to that. He shows flashes of stuff and has incredible pace. But for Daniel Marlin, who even though this is probably his best season, I think goal scoring wise it's his best, but he's not even close to the tally he was getting in Holland before. You know, he was the star of that team, that Eindhoven team, who, like, when you look at the names that club had in those seasons, they've all gone on to, or a lot of them have gone on to bigger clubs. So, it's a funny one. I think, like a lot of people, I like the guy. He seems like he really cares for the club, and he's not going to jump off and leave for Bayern the moment that someone's interested in him, you know, which I think Dortmund have that's something they want. They've been burnt by that kind of thing, so they want that. But yeah, I just there's never been something that convinces me that he really knows what he's doing. Like, he's probably a solid coach. He's a guy that you see that he works really hard. But to be Dortmund and to be, you know, winning Bundesliga titles and to be really pushing in Europe and winning Pokals, you need to have one of the top, you know, 10 coaches in the game. You know, you need to have one of the top two or three coaches in Germany if you really are going to be doing that, because you have not as many resources as Bayern or, and, you know, you don't have perhaps the scouting network that Leipzig has with their multi-club system. So you need to have a really, really great coach. And, you know, is he in the top three coaches in the Bundesliga? I don't think you can really say that, especially this season.
No. I think my top three would probably be Alonso, Hoeneß, Tuchel. And I would actually put Marco Rose.
Yeah, the Marco Rose is still, it still seems to be an odd thing that what happened with him, that he asked for patience, he asked for time, and it seemed to be that, you know, Terzic was the backup for Rosa, and he said, oh, look, I'm getting some job offers. If, you know, I'll leave the club unless there's a chance I'll become coach. And they fired Rosa, even though, you know, Dortmund was second and did pretty well that year. Marco Rosa seems to be, you know, when you think about the amount of changes in that Leipzig squad in summer, to be playing consistently well as they've been doing, it's quite a good job. And so that's, you said the top four right there. And then there's others. I mean, what Thurup's doing at Augsburg is also something that, you know, I have a personal feeling that I'm like, it's enough with Augsburg and it's enough with Mainz. That's what I think. I want to get Hamburg back. I want to get Hannover back. I want to get some of these Schalke even, you know, get them up and let's get rid of these weird clubs but they just seem to keep finding someone who does a really great job. And since he's come into Augsburg, he's done really well as well. So it's at least in the top four, like you mentioned. It doesn't seem like Tessic is in there. So that's not what you want if you're Dortmund and you want to be challenging.
Let's end this podcast on a positive note. My final question to you then, Dan, is how great have Leverkusen been this year? Trying to sum that up as quickly as you can.
It is really, it's difficult to summarize because they've just, it's this thing of being able to find something no matter what, you know, whether it's these late goals or whether it's, even though they're an incredible passing team, very intricate, then they'll sometimes score a crucial goal from a set piece. You know, they're a really intricate and dynamic team, but sometimes they'll need some piece of individual brilliance to carry them through. Like, it's just this, whenever there's been a challenge, someone stood up, or, you know, Alonso's made substitutions, which have been really effective. And also, I think with this, you know, with these late wins, it's, of course, part of it is belief and part of it is getting momentum as you go along. You know, that's when you get that momentum and confidence, it's, you know, Bayern's had that for so long, and that's what top teams have, because you have advantages in this kind of thing. But also, I think it's just the way they play, that they really tire teams out. They really exhaust you. You know, no matter whether they're playing like a team with strong possession-based players, or they're playing a team that's playing a low block, they seem to break through at the end because of this dynamism, because of they're so energetic. I mean, even watching them, you know, it's just constant the way they play, the constant movement of the ball. You know, the players are always in motion off the ball. And I think that's just exhausting for opposition clubs. And so these late goals are not only a product of belief and maybe a little bit of luck, but it's this, the way that they wear you down. And, you know, I mean, who's responsible for that is Xabi Alonso. So this rate of late goals and this rate of, you know, continually finding a way to win, or at least to stay unbeaten, you know, it's full credit to him.
And hopefully it continues me all the way to the Europa League final, which of course means more work for you, Dan.
Wouldn't mind a cheap speaking trip of your work. That'd be that'd be all right.
Nothing wrong with that. Before we wrap this up, where can people find you?
As an agency, we're picked up by clients everywhere. I mean, and translated into different languages. Some of our major clients are Yahoo or France 24. They'll always pick up Agence France Presse articles. Occasionally I'll see my writing in French or in Spanish, and that's always it's always nice to see, because I don't really speak those languages very well. But otherwise on Twitter, Dan Whiten, I post my links incessantly and have my silly observations on there as well. So you can always find me there.
Anyone who listens to this podcast knows these observations are not silly at all. It's great to have you on. As always, this podcast is brought to you by Bet Online. And yeah, Dan, this was a pleasure. I can't believe it took so long to finally get you on, and we'll definitely have you back. Absolutely. We'll be back with more content. Stefan is off for the rest of this week. Actually, that's quite a lie. He will be back on Thursday for the Bundesliga preview show. But yes, we'll have a bonus show planned on Julian Nagelsmann saying no to Bayern Munich and what happens next. That will be with me and Matt Ford. So keep your eyes peeled for that. And then, of course, I have Sepp back to chat about St. Pauli. So that's the honor podcast that's coming later this week on the Substack. So if you're not a subscriber yet, check that out. And yeah, we'll be back soon. Until then, auf Wiedersehen.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Save big money at Menards. Let the fresh air in and keep the bugs out with replacement screen for your doors and windows from AdForce. It's easy to install, durable against the elements, and comes in a variety of types to suit your needs. Repair your screens today with a roll of replacement screen on sale through May 5th. And check out more great deals happening now in our weekly flyer on Menards.com. Save big money at Menards.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.